This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
It's actually game day in the ACC in football. We've got championship field hockey going on, too. We got a little bit of everything heading into a very, very important weekend, Wes, in which we see the biggest game in college football involve two ACC teams ranked in the top five, number one Clemson at number four Notre Dame. What's happening? You doing all right?
How you doing? I'm good. Your Friday all right? We've had a long week. We've had a lot going on. Yeah, everything
been,
good?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's been a busy week now. We've had a little bit of everything this week. Well, you know, we've had medical procedures, and we've had cancellations and postponements and fake lefts and go rights. And like I said, we've made it to a Friday, and God willing, we'll have games tomorrow. Well, hopefully a game tonight with NC State and Miami. And, of course, we'll get to football, but it's a championship week in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah, started yesterday here on ACC Network, the Field Hockey Championships in Chapel Hill at Karen Shelton Stadium, hosted by North Carolina. Remember, it rotates around to the campus sites in the ACC in this particular sport. We started yesterday afternoon with a one-goal match. Virginia beat Wake Forest 2-1 to get the Field Hockey Championship underway. Laura Jansen scored twice off assists from Cato Guskins. And one of them late. There's one. Oh, look at that, huh?
Nice.
Right through the five hole.
Yeah.
Virginia, a winner. 13:49 to go. That was the game winner there. Then last night, we got to Syracuse in overtime pack. There's the game winner. Look at this.
You know what?
The orange.
That looked like you chipping out from behind a tree.
It could have been. Laura Graziazzi was the golden goal, 2:56 into the extra session. And then the host, North Carolina, the two seed. Tar Heels, Peyton Worth scored the first goal of the match and her third of the season to put Carolina up 1-0. Madison Orbono added another goal. And then, for good measure, Aaron Mattson tallied as well. Carolina ends up beating Boston College 4-0. So that's gives us all the first round or quarterfinal action from yesterday, if you will. And by the way, North Carolina's victory proved to be win number 700 in the career for Karen Shelton. And she joined all ACC after the game to talk about the Tar Heels win.
Well, you know, I'm obviously very proud of the program. And I told the girls that I didn't play 1 second of those 700 wins. But it gives us pause and a chance to think about all those student athletes that participated in each of those wins. So I couldn't be prouder of them. Over the years, you know, it's taken 40 to get to 700, but there's been hundreds of amazing student athletes that have, you know, provided blood, sweat, and tears to earn them. So I'm proud of them, and I want to say thank you to them.
Classy lady, great coach. Again, when the building's named after you and you're still out there doing your thing, enough said. But it's all chalk, right? Seeds 1, 2, 3, and 4 all move on. And field hockey's a big deal in this league. League's great. And, hey, off to the races we go. It's going to be out of sight. Here you go. Here's the brackets. Again, chalk all over the joint. North Carolina, Syracuse, Louisville,
you'll get,
Virginia.
By the way, the Tar Heels are shooting for their fourth straight ACC title, and then sometime in the spring will play for their third straight NCAA title. They are 29-0 in Karen Shelton Stadium and 56-15 all-time at the ACC Field Hockey Championship. So, there you go.
By the way, Syracuse this year, all 8 matches determined by one goal. By one. We'll see. Okay, we're going to have it covered for you right here on ACC Network. Should be good.
Yeah. So, the bracket tomorrow. Pac told you it's game day tonight on the football card. We've got number 11, Miami at NC State, kickoff tonight on ESPN at 7:30. You see the FPI numbers that give Miami a 67% chance to win. It's the first time Manny Diaz is going to see NC State as a head coach. Remember, he was an assistant there for 6 years in the Chuck Amato era, most notably with Phillip Rivers. And so that'll be interesting. By the way, FPI does not like Miami as it relates to the championship game, the ACC championship game. Despite being one of three teams with one or fewer losses, FPI only gives two-loss Carolina and Virginia Tech a better chance at playing in Charlotte than the Canes. I'm dying to know what you think about this, Pac.
Well, the FPI, I have no idea what that is. I've asked people in the know. They can't break it down for me. So it's just a number for you to chew on and get that all over you. But I will give you some numbers. I think in this game tonight, if you're the quarterback, beware. Beware. Miami has had 98 pressures on the quarterback. That's the best in the Power Five. So Bailey Hockman, head on a swivel. Here come the Canes. Flip side. Derek King, be careful. You've been sacked four more times now in each of the last three games. NC State will come after you. So both of these quarterbacks tonight got to make plays, and both defenses are sitting back there licking their chops going, okay, find the quarterback. Get him. Search and destroy. So it'll be a good one tonight. And by the way, when you turn on your television, the Canes are going stormtrooper on you tonight. All whites. NC State's going all black. It will be easy to figure out who's who tonight. All right, so you got the Stormtroopers on one side. You're going all black with NC State on the Friday night at Carter Finley under the lights. I think this is going to be a good football game. And, you know, here's the other thing, Wes.
Yeah.
You know, Manny Diaz has got to figure out this bye week thing. I mean, the Canes have a chance, right? You look at that schedule. We've talked about it this week. Are they good enough to sweep all five that are left and kind of maybe work themselves into an appearance in Charlotte? Well, it starts tonight, but they've got to figure out how you win after a bye week. Manny Diaz and the boys are 0-4 under that scenario. And keep in mind, both of these teams have had the same amount of time to prep for this game. Both coming off open dates. Both obviously had Tuesday off with the election. Obviously, Kane's got to travel. So I think this is going to be a good football game tonight. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm interested to see how NC State's offense, now knowing, you know, the Devin Leary thing was a week old, that kind of deal. Now they've had a bye week. Tim Beck's had a chance maybe to kind of reset a little bit of what they do from a playbook standpoint with both Bailey Hockman and potentially Ben Finley, I guess. The other idea is, Pack, you know, if they sorted out some stuff up front to run the football, right? Maybe running the football a little bit more. Remember, you got Bam Knight, you got Ricky Person, you got Jordan Houston. You got all sorts of candidates, and the lefty Hockman, no question, can throw it. And who's he looking to throw it to? Is it Thayer Thomas? Is it Emeka Emezi? You know, how will the Wolfpack kind of go through their checks and balances on the offensive side tonight? And I thought Manny Navarro gave us something interesting about Miami defensively. Because of Nestor Silvera in the middle and then Phillips and Roche on the edge, and you mentioned those pressures, I wouldn't be surprised if Miami tries to get after it early to keep things a little rocky for NC State offensively. It'll be interesting to see who settles in kind of first, if you will, tonight.
Yeah, being able to run the football has been kind of a bugaboo a little bit lately for Miami, too. Really, since the Clemson game. I think Clemson gave everybody the blueprint with Derek King. They said, hey, you know what? We don't trust that you can beat us throwing it downfield. So, you know what? We're going to come after you. And if you beat us throwing it, good for you. Tip of the hat. You know, Cameron Harris has been disappointing here lately. Talk about, hey, I want more touches. And here you go. I mean, this is about as clear cut as you can get. Yards per game. First three, 232. Life's good. Last three, 106. Yards per attempt. Look at that number. Look how drastically that fell off the mountain. So being able to run the football is going to be key, I think, on both sides tonight, Wes, especially given the fact that both defenses are probably looking about, hey, how do I attack the quarterback? Miami's offensive line's had a hard time keeping Derek King clean back there. And same thing with Miami's sitting there. I don't care who they play. They're coming after the quarterback. So Again, I think this will be a highly entertaining. I think this will be a close football game tonight. I really do.
Yeah. Sidebar to the 2020 season, a win tonight by Miami would equal their total of all last year, by the way, when they finished 6-7. A win tonight by NC State, and they would surpass their win total from a season ago. I would qualify both schools as trending up, wouldn't you, Pac, in 2020?
Yes. As we sit here today, there's no question. There is no question. But I will also take you back to a year ago, Wes, because Miami, I thought, had turned the corner. In fact, I remember saying on the show, I think I feel good about where Miami is looking down the last two or three games in their schedule, because I thought they were going to win out. And they go L. So, hey, I'm just telling you, it's college football. You never know. I say it all the time. The more you read, the more you study, the dumber you get when you get to game day. So, I think the Canes have a chip on their shoulder from a year ago. I just think NC State does too. And they're coming off the North Carolina game that I know they're not happy about. So they've had 2 weeks to kind of sit there and have to stew on that and go, okay, next time we play, it's go time. And like I said, Miami's going Stormtroopers. State's going all black. A lot on the line for Miami as far as maybe getting to Charlotte. And for NC State, you want to kind of continue, like you said, the upward trajectory. So, good. A really good game tonight.
It's fourth time NC State's faced a ranked opponent this year. They're 1-2 so far in those ball games, and they've lost 8 of their last 9 against AP-ranked foes. 0-3 against Miami teams that are ranked for NC State. A side note to the run game, by the way. The good folks at ESPN Stats and Information have compiled this. NC State's actually running the ball better with Bailey Hockman at quarterback than with Devin Leary, Ben Finley, what have you. Whatever the combination might be. So, again, just throw it out there. Bam Knight, Ricky Person, Jordan Houston, Hockman moves around pretty good. Got plenty of weapons on the perimeter. Is there a way you can neutralize kind of those pass rushing techniques that Miami's employed so well this fall? We'll see if that's one of the lever points in the ball game today.
I'm going to be watching. You know, I'll be honest with you. For the hype this week in college football, big picture, which obviously Notre Dame, Clemson, and you know we're going to get to it. And you got, of course, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Friday night's got a pretty good selection of games. For a Friday night, you got this game, which has tons of intrigue, obviously, within the ACC. And then you've got the BYU-Boise State thing going on, too. So we've got four ranked versus ranked matchups in college football this weekend. But I would tell you, from an ACC perspective, while the league is obviously in the spotlight, given what's going to happen in South Bend tomorrow night, this is a pretty good appetizer for a Friday night before your main course of college football on Saturday. Really is.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tonight, it's game night in Raleigh. NC State and Miami should be a good one. And tomorrow, Wes, it's all about Notre Dame and Clemson. It's 1-4, the sixth time in ACC history that we have a top five matchup. And the good news is for Notre Dame, the team that's lower ranked has won the last four. Just saying.
I was telling somebody this yesterday. I was asked about this game yesterday, and were we not discussing this game at some point in New Orleans last year?
Yes.
Either the day of or the day after the national championship game?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I mean, this game has been kind of out there for a while, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't think it's changed from the original schedule. Right? No, it's kept its same date, did it not?
November 7th has always been the date. Of course, granted, when we were having these conversations back in January after the national championship game, it was under the premise that this is going to be the biggest non-conference game in college football this year. And there was a bunch of games that you were going to get excited about, like Ohio State at Oregon was one and all that kind of stuff. But this was the game. This was the game that when we put a close to the 2019 college football season – everybody, I don't care where you were, this was the game you said, man, November 7th, I know what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to watch Clemson at Notre Dame. Can you imagine Trevor Lawrence, Justin Ross rolling in there? It's going to be freezing cold. The Irish got everybody back. They're going to be really good. And here we are. It's going to be, what, 65 degrees. No Trevor Lawrence, no Justin Ross. But do not fool yourself. This is a critical, important game. But I will say this, Wes. You still get the sensation that the chances of them seeing each other one more time, you know, there's a pretty good chance that could happen. Now, again, you still got to go play, and you're going to hear what Dabo's got to say later on. And he kind of said this, obviously, when we did the interview yesterday, that this is not the end-all game. This is just another one of those, hey, you kind of find out where you are. And that's true for Notre Dame. It's true for Clemson, especially given all the injuries the Tigers have. But, hey, it's next man up. There's no excuses. You got to go play. And but it does feel a little different versus what we thought it was going to be back in January and February before we knew this pandemic was going to hit.
Correct. And that part is interesting, too, because the landscape of the game has not changed because both are still in the top five. However, the landscape around the game has changed.
Totally.
You mentioned the personnel, Ross and Lawrence, things like that. The fact Notre Dame's in the ACC, that we're looking at the potential of a repeat of this in 6 weeks in Charlotte for the ACC championship, I guess. Those type elements, that part has changed. But the fact that they're playing and, you know, they're doing this in South Bend on a Saturday night and things like that, and they're in the top five, that part that we thought about in January has not changed very much at all.
I mentioned this to you earlier in the week. I do think there's more pressure on Notre Dame in this case. I mean, they both want to win. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to be a top five program and go, oh, we really don't care. No, you care. Everybody wants to win this game. But I think there's more at stake to me for Notre Dame in the big picture than there is Clemson here. And the reason I say that is Clemson's now kind of established itself as one of the two elites, right? It's Bama, Clemson.
Right.
I mean, when you think of the college football playoff, you think Bama, Clemson. Notre Dame wants to get into that mix. They've been there once, right? They've been there once. And Brian Kelly has done a tremendous job down the last 3 years in particular going double-digit winners, back-to-back-to-back-to-back, all that stuff. But they need to win one of these games, right? Even Notre Dame's staunchest fans that I deal with realize that, hey, you know what? We're doing a lot of good things. We're doing a lot of things right. And it's good to be in the conversation. But, man, we got to win one of these. And so I just sense that at home, Clemson coming in with, again, no star quarterback, three starters on the defensive side, pivotal players that aren't going to play. It seems like the opportunity for the Irish seems almost paramount tomorrow night. That, hey, this is the moment, right? This is when you got to go take care of business, win the game, and go, guess what? When you start talking about Bama and Clemson and Ohio State, don't you dare leave us out, right, for this year. Don't you dare leave us out. So it just feels to me that the ball is kind of in Notre Dame's court for this game Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assumption, a very fair statement and thought process, because you're right. Notre Dame, for the time being, is on that list behind those three,
right?
And your point about the game, you know, yes, Notre Dame played Clemson a couple of years ago, the Cotton Bowl game. Clemson won handily. Prior to that, the last time Notre Dame had been on the stage was the BCS title game loss and a bad one to Alabama. So you kind of shift here. What's the platform that Notre Dame needs to be on? If they want to be closer to the list that has Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, a win tomorrow night in South Bend does a ton of good for certainly that cause in the Irish way. The gear change in the ACC tomorrow is teams that don't play very often, Notre Dame and Clemson, and a top five matchup in the ACC. And then you get one of the longer games that has happened in the ACC, and that's the one that comes up at noon tomorrow on ESPN2 involving North Carolina and Duke. Now, the Blue Devils have gotten a couple of wins. They picked up one at Syracuse. They got one last Saturday night against Charlotte. And now all of a sudden you get this fabled opponent, Duke Carolina, just about everything. Maybe more noted outside the footprint of the league for basketball. Anytime Duke and Carolina get together, it's good, it's spicy, it's always, you know, tested. And last year the ball game ended when Chaz Surratt intercepted the jump pass, right, at the goal line. Blue Devils had a chance to win the game. Deion Jackson's going to throw the jump pass. Chaz Surratt comes away with the interception. Now, all of a sudden, here's Carolina. And, Mark, for all the good that North Carolina's done, the two losses at Florida State and at Virginia almost leave you kind of going, now, wait a second. Are they going to take that next step here? And I'm not diminishing anything Carolina's done, but they leave you a moment to question kind of just how far they've made it up the road yet. You know, everybody said they were overrated at 5, and Mack Brown even kind of indicated, hey, look, we may not be the fifth best team in the country, just given the landscape. But are we doubting Carolina at this point? Where are we in terms of the way we look at the Tar Heels and obviously a very talented offense?
I'm not doubting them at all. I it's pretty simple for North Carolina. You've got to win out. Maybe when we get to Charlotte, you got to win out. I mean, it's right there. Tag, yeah. You're it. On your mark, set, go. The question is, though, defensively, are they good enough to run the table? We know they can score. They've proven that point. Old Sam Howell can sling it, and they got guys that can catch it, and they can score. But defensively, Wes, you know, they were not very good last week. Let's be honest. I mean, you give up 44, you're going to lose a game. I got news for you. They were sound asleep in the first half against Florida State, and probably we'll look back at that game and go, man, woulda, coulda, shoulda. But this becomes a game this weekend that, hey, it's your arch rival. You know Duke's going to play with their hair on fire. Mack Brown's had great success against the Blue Devils. The last 9 Mack Brown North Carolina teams that have played Duke have won. 9 up, 9 down. Piece of cake. But it's a rival game. And, you know, crazy things happen in games like this. And when you've got the Food Lion Cup on the line, expect it. So if you're North Carolina and you want to get to Charlotte, pretty simple. You got to win out, and that means their defense has to be better. Has to be better. I'm not worried about their offense.
Yeah. Pack, when you start diving into numbers, Carolina is lights out good in the first quarter. They're lights out good in the fourth quarter, right? I mean, they've scored on their opening drive all except once so far this year. The fourth quarter, their plus negative in the fourth quarter is 44 points. It leads all of FBS. Okay, look at these first half scoring margins. I mean, the second quarter is the one that's kind of tripping them up. They're minus 27 scoring in the second quarter, which is 90th among FBS. 90.
That's not good, Wes. That's not good.
No.
I will tell you this, too.
Is that too much analytics and stats for you?
For me on a Friday morning, that would be a little overboard. But that's okay. I know you like that stuff.
All right.
I like to cut right to the chase. We know that Sam Howell is a big-time quarterback, but when he holds the ball too long, he becomes just another guy back there. And let me tell you what Duke loves to do. They like to tackle the quarterback. They've got 26 sacks. That's third in the league. They've got terrific edge rushers. And if you're Sam Howell and you're going to sit back there all day looking around going, all right, which guy am I going to throw it to? Is he open? He's open. That is not a good idea against Duke because they will get to the quarterback. Kind of like we talked about with Miami and NC State tonight. Sam Howell's got to get the ball out of his hand. Now, he's capable of doing that. North Carolina can score. But like I said, my question marks for the Heels are on the defensive side. My question marks for Duke, hey, can you hold on the ball? I mean, you're not good enough to turn it over 3, 4, 5 times and beat anybody, much less your arch rival. So there's some fundamental things, I think, in this game that will determine the winner. But anytime these two get together, I don't care what the sport is, it's entertaining, it's fun, and a lot of times you get some endings that you just simply can't believe. So these two have delivered in that department.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
It's a game day in the ACC. Miami, NC State tonight. We got the field hockey championships rocking and rolling. And this little game tomorrow you might have heard of. Notre Dame is hosting Clemson, 1-4. And who to break it down better than one of Notre Dame's very finest? A guy that has joined us on the radio show many times, does a great job on Fox. Brady Quinn joins us. Brady, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing this morning?
We're awesome. And first of all, I hope you're doing okay. I mean, everything all right? Everybody's good to go?
Yeah. Look, I'm 100% healthy. Everyone in my family is healthy, at least so far as we know. So I can't speak for anyone else, or I'm not really able to, but we are all doing well. Thank you for asking.
You got it. That's the most important thing. All right. You've been part of this Notre Dame lore in terms of a big game at home. Now, granted, it's a pandemic. It's not 82,000 going crazy and all that stuff, but it's still part of what Notre Dame's culture, fabric, and DNA are all about. In a normal circumstance, what's it like game week when you've got one of these kind of games coming to South Bend?
Yeah, I mean, Pat, this is why you go to Notre Dame. I mean, you really do go there for, you know, you would have said national exposure back in the day before everyone was on TV, but now it's truly for the schedule, a national schedule that's changed this year, but you still get that opportunity to have a number one opponent, a number one overall ranked opponent, Clemson. And the atmosphere is awesome. I actually talked to Ian Book earlier this week, and I told him, I said, that's what I miss the most, because I remember back before the 2005 USC game, after they had won a national championship or on that win streak, you know, during the week, you would get like people starting to show up at your practice and kind of hang around for autographs, things like that, or be knocked on your dorm room like Thursday. That week, it was Tuesday. I mean, we had people on campus all week long for that matchup, and it was just absolutely electric. I mean, the pep rally the night before the game was so big, they had to put it in our stadium. And it was top to bottom filled one half of that bowl. I mean, you're talking about 40,000 people for a pep rally that had to be moved into the stadium. So it was unlike anything I had ever experienced at that point in time. It was one of the craziest, obviously, games and everything else that went along with it. But the atmosphere is what's going to be missing. And look, there'll be like 11,000 fans there trying to do their best. But that's, I think, is the tough thing for both teams, really. I mean, you talk to Leinart all, you know, every week, Pat. He would tell you that was one of the coolest probably experiences of his time, even before the game, the way they were rocking the bus and how the fans were there for their walkthrough going into the stadium. I mean, it's for both the home and away team.
Brady, you mentioned the conversation with Ian Book, and Mark and I have had this this talk about him since Notre Dame spending the year in the ACC, about kind of where he falls in singular successes, right? I mean, obviously he's had a marvelous career there, but I look at him as a guy who he's a much bigger piece tomorrow night than I think the general public probably realizes. I mean, he's got to keep everybody composed on the offensive side, and he's got to get the defense comfortable with what they've got to handle with Clemson a little bit by what the offense does, I think.
Yeah, I think he's kind of that second or third key component of how this is going to work for Notre Dame if they're going to win, right? It starts with defense. If you can't take away Travis Etienne, you've already lost. Like, that is – if you go back to last week, Jeff Hafley brings blitz zero, right? They got an extra defender. Mm-hmm. DJ Uiagalelei finds Travis Etienne on a little free swing pass. He releases up the field for a touchdown. That started building that momentum of, okay, like, we're down, but like the freshman can handle this. He's going to help bring us back. But they relied on Etienne. So if they can't stop him, none of it's going to matter. And then it's about getting pressure on Uiagalelei with their front, right? Because they don't like bringing a ton of pressure. It's going to be more of Hayes and Foskey and Ogundeji. Like, those are the guys they rely on. So that's where it starts. And the next thing is, I think it's Book and it's the offensive line. Like, this is one of those games where if you're Notre Dame's offensive line and you're viewed as one of the best, maybe the best in college football, this is where you got to show up. They're probably not going to have Tyler Davis. I don't know if Skolsky's going to play or not, but you should be able to physically move them off the line of scrimmage and create some running plays. And the other thing is that Brent Venables does a great job of that not many people talk about is he constantly cheats the box count. He will play a light box, a 5-6-man box at times, and he will still be able to stop the run. And so they can't allow him to do that. They've got to force him to put extra defenders in the box, and then that's where it falls on Ian Book. He's going to use his legs. He's got to be a good decision maker. And then he's got to find whoever that is, whether it's Michael Mayer, the tight end, Javon McKinley's leading the receiving right now, but whoever it is that he can find that one-on-one matchup to exploit.
Yeah, the good news for Notre Dame, no Tyler Davis, no Mike Jones, no Skalski. So, I mean, the three dudes right there in the middle of that Clemson D are going to be wearing baseball hats on the sideline. So from that perspective, that's certainly an advantage for Notre Dame on the offensive front. Brady, one of the things that we've talked about this week, and I'm curious to get your take, especially given your Notre Dame DNA, and I want you to wear your Notre Dame hat to answer this question. It seems to me there's all the pressure on the Irish in this game. Clemson's now has kind of established itself as one of the elite with Alabama. Notre Dame has been very, very good here the last 3 years and change with what Brian Kelly's been able to do. But they need to get one of those W's. Where all of a sudden, when you're talking about Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, who's that next team? Hey, the Irish need to have one of those kind of W's on the resume to be in the conversation. And when you start talking about no Trevor Lawrence, no Skalski, no Jones, no Tyler Davis, the game's at home, it just seems like the burden to hold serve is exclusively on Notre Dame tomorrow night. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think because of the injuries, too. If this was a Clemson team with Trevor Lawrence alone, you would probably see them favored by, 9, maybe 10 points, right? Right now, last time I checked it, it was about 5.5. And I think that, look, I mean, you got to give Dabo Swinney and his staff credit, the way they've recruited, the way they've built. But to your point, I think it has a lot to do with who is not playing, where the game is being played. Because the truth of the matter is, two things. They're going to have to play twice. These are the two best teams in the ACC, in my opinion. And how they're going to do the conference championship game, whoever loses this game, they're probably going to see them again in the ACC championship game. I think it's tough to beat a team twice. But so if you're Notre Dame and you lose it, like you kind of have an advantage of like, all right, like we can figure out how to fix some of those mistakes. But then you got to probably face Trevor Lawrence. Then you're going to have to probably face some of these other guys coming back, which makes it all that much harder. So, look, I would just say this. These teams are drastically different than what they were in 2018, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's where we saw young Trevor Lawrence, a couple of big throws before the end of the half when Julian Love, the All-American for Notre Dame, went out in that game, if you recall.
Yep.
They picked on his replacement, two quick scores, 14 points later, and you're going, holy crap, this game's blown wide open. It wasn't as bad as the scoreboard looked. You know, it really was, and I think when in comparison to how bad Alabama looked versus Clemson that year, it really didn't look that bad at all.
Right.
So I think they've got every shot in the world to win this one, but, you know, for Notre Dame fans, even if they don't, there's still probably going to be a rematch.
Brady, it's interesting you bring up Julian Love. I was in South Bend about a month after that game, and Jack Nolan turned to me. He said, Julian Love going out of the game was the turning point in the whole ball game for Notre Dame that night. It's interesting you bring that up because Jack said the exact same thing to me on a basketball trip a month later. I want to ask you about Uwe Ungalale because I was impressed. Tom Luganbill was with us yesterday. We were both texting back and forth on Saturday about kind of how they were phasing him into the throw game last Saturday against what Jeff Hafley would do. Notre Dame brings a lot of the same kind of concepts and looks, I guess, that BC does. What do you expect Uwe Ungalale's, anticipation to be Saturday night?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I was really, really, really impressed. I mean, look, he's already big. He's athletic. He's got a strong arm. Those things are on display. You could see that in pregame. You know what I'm saying? Like, what I was impressed mm-hmm. by the most, I talked about the blitz zero look, which, I mean, look, I remember being right. in the NFL with Tim Tebow, and he couldn't tell you if a team was bringing blitz zero or not, what to do with the football. DJ Uwe Ungalale is a freshman in his first start. He's like, oh, yeah, they're bringing a lot of pressure. There's my quick answer. Boom. And then he gets it done. They score a touchdown. You go into the first quarter, there was a third and eight. He's in shock, and he drops back. 1, 2, 3, plants, throws, balls out. It was before, I want to say it was Powell, even got out of his break. Now, it wasn't the most accurate football, but I looked at it just from, like, my experience of playing college in the NFL going, that's the kind of timing you want at the NFL level. Like, it's not even required at the college level. He's throwing off a plant. You very rarely see anyone do that anymore in college. And he's doing it with the proper timing that, like, NFL evaluators are going, holy cow. Like, that, yeah, that's what we're looking for at that level. So his timing and anticipation to me really stood out too. And, again, some of the balls were a little bit off, but that's his first start. Like, he's still developing chemistry with these guys. He made a throw in that game that, I mean, it wasn't even a completion. It was an incompletion, and it wowed me more than anything else he did. I want to say it might have been the beginning of the second quarter. They had double moves up on the outside last week. He looked left the whole way. He wanted to go that direction, and he didn't like it. And at the last second, he flipped his hips back, fired a dart to the end zone. I think that was to Powell, too, but it ended up being, I think, a PI. But bottom line was, I was just floored. I was like, who has the arm strength and the ability to be able to do that in that moment, to flip and kind of know and then deliver that accurate of football? So to me, I mean, there was another example of him working to his third progression, put a ball across the middle to Amari Rodgers in a really tight window. You just don't see many guys come along with that sort of maturity, with the skill set and everything else. So I know Trevor Lawrence ain't going to be there this week, but it's still a huge challenge for Notre Dame. And it looks like Dabo Swinney's going to be competitive for a long, long time if this guy's going to be their future quarterback.
Brady, before we go, I do want to ask you one more question about Ian Book. And this is not necessarily for tomorrow night's game, even though it could certainly come into play, but I'm talking about now big picture for the Irish to get to a college football playoff and potentially win a national championship. And you've lived this life. Do you think at some point in time, when you start checking boxes for Notre Dame 2020, offensive line, terrific. Experienced quarterback, terrific. Stable backs, terrific. Future star at tight end, got it. Speed on the defense, got it. Hamilton plays every hat he could wear. Hey, they've got everything checked except one thing, and that is, can they consistently throw the ball downfield? And you are a quarterback, and QBs love to sling it. Do you think that needs to eventually be in the arsenal for Ian Book and Notre Dame if they're going to get to the promised land?
Yeah, of course. But I think also we have to take into consideration this. Who was the leading wide receiver for Notre Dame in 2018? When Ian Book took over, by the way, week four, he didn't start that season as a starter. It was Brandon Wimbush. Took over versus Wake Forest week four. The answer is Miles Boykin. Well, who was the leading receiver the following year? Because Miles Boykin got drafted by the Baltimore Ravens and moved on. Mm-hmm. Well, then it was Chase Claypool. Cole Kmet played a big role in that too. Both those guys were drafted and moved on. So now he comes into his third year starting, and he's got to figure out who that guy is again. I mean, the advantage that I felt like I always had was I grew up with Jeff Samardzija. I grew up with Maurice Stovall and Raymond McKnight, who were a year older than me, but, you know, Raymond had an injury, so he got to be there for my final year. Like, it's nice to be able to have those guys with you each year to grow and develop that chemistry. Like, I could throw to Jeff without him looking. And I knew when he was going to turn around and look and how he's going to turn around and look. So he hasn't had that necessarily. I mean, he's had some guys who are complimentary pieces, but not the guys to rely on. Like, he had Chris Fink for a couple of years. He's a good complimentary piece. He's not your number one. He's not the guy who's going to separate versus Clemson. So that's I think, is the biggest thing. Is he's got a freshman tight end at Michael Mayer. That chemistry is growing. Javon McKinley stepped up. Joe Wilkins stepped up last week. I mean, there's a number of guys, but it's hard in a year like this year, Pac, to be able to develop that sort of chemistry and timing when you don't have as much time.
Right.
And now you look at every year he's got had to adjust. It's a hard thing to do as a quarterback. So I think it will continue to get better and better and better.
Well, listen, we appreciate the time. I know that life is goofy and upside down and all that stuff. And number one, glad you're healthy and all that. That's the most important. And again, keep up the great work.
Thank you. I'm just glad to be able to be talking ball with you guys. Go Irish. Enjoy the game this weekend.
You got it, man. See ya.
Thanks, Brady. Appreciate it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
And many thanks to Brady Quinn. Again, does a great job. And I like that little go Irish he threw in there at the end. That, you know, I said, hey, listen, put on your Notre Dame hat today. This is not a Fox thing. This is not a, hey, we're covering the Big Ten. We're not, no. So that's it. He gave a little go Irish at
go
the
Noles.
End. I liked it. Liked it. All right. We got
go
other
pack.
Games, though.
Go Noles.
No. He had a little energy to it. He had a little energy. Right. Go Irish. I liked it. All right. We got other games, though.
Boston College Syracuse. Yeah, Boston College Syracuse. Back in the day, this had some spice to it. Still does, by
still
the way.
Still does, yeah.
I mean, ball game's been hotly contested, and, you know, they've been a lot of fun over the last few years, especially since Syracuse arrived in the league. Pack, are you familiar with the Lambert Trophy that's presented to the champion of Northeast football in this country?
I am. I am. And the reason I am dialed into that is I told you the first job I had out of college was with a sports syndicator called TEN Sports. They're defunct now, like most of the other things I've touched. But we had the television rights to Pitt, BC, Syracuse, and Notre Dame. So I this is like my old stomping ground, man. I have been a part of these kind of games before. So yes, I'm very familiar with that.
Well, nothing says Northeast football like a 2 o'clock kickoff tomorrow at the Dome for BC and Syracuse. And Boston College is going to try and shake the Clemson hangover tomorrow.
That's right.
Pac, do you know?
I do.
That teams are 1-6 this season in games after they've played Clemson.
Yeah, the only one.
1-6.
The only one that figured out that, hey, they're not going to beat us twice was Miami, who ironically got by Pittsburgh. And they were, to be honest with you, were very sluggish in that game, but found a way to win the game. But, you know, we saw this when Florida State joined the league, Wes, and people went, ooh, we got Florida State. And you would circle your calendar and say, man, we got the Noles this week. And, man, you would be so sky high to go try to knock these dudes off. And, hey, you do your best, you'd lose. And then all of a sudden you'd have this hangover the next week where you were just as flat as you could be, and we lose twice. And, you know, Clemson's kind of done that to people now this past decade and now into this year, and obviously with the 1-6 number.
It is interesting. You mentioned Miami and the win over Pittsburgh. Even the Citadel folks, who lost 49-0, lost the next week to the Fighting Tom Luganbills of Eastern Kentucky, 37-14. Wake Forest lost to NC State. Virginia lost to NC State. Georgia Tech, who lost 73-7, lost at Boston College by 3 scores. Syracuse lost the following week. So what does BC do? This is a test for Jeff Hafley. This is an interesting dynamic because we know BC's got – I mean, we know Syracuse has had all sorts of things happen, right, that's changed their football landscape, including Trill Williams announcing this week he's going to opt out for the final 4 weeks. But if Jeff Hafley's team's taking the next step here in year one, and now all of a sudden we're starting to have a little bit of an expectation, right, maybe about what the Eagles are about, Pac, don't you feel like this is one they got to go get to just kind of lock themselves in for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I think BC looks at this game by saying, hey, we're better than Syracuse. Hangover, no hangover. I mean, the Cuse has just had one of those kind of years, right? And BC's also going to try to do something tomorrow they've never done before, and that's win 3 straight times at the Dome. Now, you remember last year they scored about 1,000 points. But this is a whole new deal, right? Dracovic's been fantastic. Hafley's got people fired up. Their game plan last week was great, and they executed to perfection in the first half and almost pulled off the ultimate upset going on the road to knock off a number one. So they got to put that behind them, like you said, and make sure Clemson doesn't beat them twice. But they are a better team than Syracuse. And, you know, for poor Dino Babers, and again, you and I love Dino to death, but they've lost 4 in a row. And they've just somehow have to figure out a way to stop the bleeding. Because when you look at the schedule, I mean, it's just not pretty. They've been outgained by about 200 yards a game. And you just think of Syracuse and explosive offense, but they're trying to figure out who their quarterback is. Dino was pulled a Mark Packer this week and said, hey, we're still evaluating. We'll figure out who our guy's going to be, and kept all that under wraps. But I think BC's playing with a ton of confidence. I know they're bummed out that thing got away from them last week, up 28-10. But I think that it was a shot in the arm to Hafley, his staff, and his players. That, hey, guess what? When we're ready to play, we can compete with everybody. They pushed North Carolina to the brink. They pushed Clemson to the brink. They've won a bunch of games. They're playing. They got their quarterback. Again, the sky's the limit right now at BC for football, because Jeff Hafley has done a brilliant job.
All right. Phil Dracovic has 288 dropbacks this year. You see this note? This is something. 288 dropbacks. The Boston College record is 341. Well, he could approach their total of 341 all last season. Now, what kind of records has he set in the first 7 games at BC? I mean, it's unbelievable. When you think about the changing in their personality, look at this. Through the first 7 games at Boston College, 1,875 yards. Is that a record? Yes. Completions? Yes. Touchdowns? Yes. It's crazy. No, Pack, for all the changes, like, and we talked about what Jeff Collins has done at Georgia Tech, right? Spread option to pro style, right? Pro style spread, whatever you want to call it. You think about BC, who was living in 22 personnel, two tight ends, two backs, almost every snap seemingly, right? To now flinging it everywhere. You talk about offensive transformation. Frank Cignetti, Jeff Hafley, they and in concert with what they've done with their personnel, it's unbelievable. They throw it now the way they used to run it.
That would be true. And that's why, in my opinion, if we stop the season today, and thank God we're not, he'd be your ACC Coach of the Year. That's why.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.